Hey, everybody. It's Anna Charlie Kirk Show. Who killed Kennedy? Jack Roth, the author of Killing Kennedy, joins us. And then what is with this war on stoves? Legendary chef Andrew Gruhl from California joins our program. Email me directly, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support our program at charliekirk.com/support. And start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. With us is Jack Roth, who is the author of Killing Kennedy, Exposing the Plot, the Cover-Up, and the Consequences. And Jack Roth joins us now. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Charlie. Appreciate it.
From a young age, I was convinced that there was more to the story when it came to the assassination of Kennedy. It's very obvious to me for a variety of reasons. But tell us about your book and make the kind of layman argument for someone that is not really in the weeds of the Zapruder film and Kevin Costner's rendition of it, and actually walking, you know, in downtown Dallas and seeing the Texas School Book Depository and the grassy knoll. What is the kind of short version of why you think there was more to the story when it came to the JFK assassination?
Yeah, well, I think you have to start with the idea of being a critical thinker when you think about these types of things. And for me, I was like you. I was born in 65. You're younger than me, but I missed the assassination by 2 years. But I always felt, since I was a young kid, that there was something not right. And that's just by using common sense, the idea that Jack Ruby would get into that police station and shoot Oswald, take Oswald out. So now there's no trial, right? Oswald can't talk anymore. So there was so much to it. And over the years, I read and I'd read more and I'd read more. But I felt that there was, even as time goes by, right, we're reaching the 60th anniversary this year. And I felt it still mattered. And I felt like it was important to reach other people and document some interesting things and present that. The fact that there have been ripple effects that have changed this country since that day, and that it does still matter. And that was the goal of the book. I wanted to try to maybe get younger people interested in it so they could carry the torch.
I mean, I think it is a metaphorical gateway drug to be able to challenge other power sources and other narratives that permeate our society. So let's just kind of go through. I have not read the book, but I'm guessing that you're sympathetic to some of these questions that need to be asked, which is, did Oswald really act alone? What was the motive for Lee Harvey Oswald? Let me ask you this question. How about this? What do you think is the most compelling piece of evidence of all the stuff, from the head back into the left to the chatter on the grassy knoll to multiple, you know, bullet entries to the missing of Kennedy's head to the fact the driver didn't turn around to the change of the motorcade route, all that? What do you think is the most compelling piece of evidence where you say, now I got to look further?
That's a great question. And I go back to Ruby because that was just not right. But I would say the magic bullet theory, the idea that this bullet, which by the way is found in pristine condition, that this bullet would go through Kennedy, hit various bones, rough, tough skin, go make these weird turns, wind up in Connolly's wrist. I mean, it is the most ridiculous thing. It's insulting. And I think sometimes we get to the point where we know it's insulting to our intelligence that they think, I say they, but that's a whole different question as to the they. But there's so much. You mentioned everything you just mentioned is a big part of that. Well, you know, where the shots came from, the autopsy, the things that happened all along the way, the Warren Commission, the fact that Alan Dulles, the guy that Kennedy fired as head of the CIA, is then put on the Warren Commission by Gerald Ford. By Lyndon Johnson. Gerald Ford was also on that committee. It screams cover up. And, you know, at that point, you just have to try to find out as much as you can. And my goal was to interview people. I wanted to get the right people to interview and ask them the right questions. That was my goal.
So look, what, let me ask you this question. In the last couple decades, what, if anything, have we learned that we did not know at the time? Let's just say that at the climax was Oliver Stone's film. That was probably with the most audience and the largest audience and most kind of population interest. What sense the publication or the release of JFK by Oliver Stone have we learned of anything in the last couple of decades?
Yeah, no, great question. I think that it's Oliver Stone. What Oliver Stone did was brilliant because he just opened it all up.
Yes.
So he got people thinking about everything, right? He just kind of threw it all in that movie. I think what we know now that we didn't know then, and Oliver Stone himself has come out with two more documentaries because now we have more information. One of the things is Oswald's connection to U.S. intelligence and the fact that he was most likely and a CIA operative. He was also in naval intelligence. And he was being, you know, he was a lower level guy and he was taking his orders and he was going to New Orleans and then he was going to getting, they got him a job at the Texas School Book Depository. They told him to go to Texas. They told him to do all these things. And, you know, they were sheep dipping him. But I think we know a lot more about Oswald. And, you know, we also know now, I think more people are aware that when they, you know, if they read, you know, something about the Warren Commission report or a lot of new documents to come out. And I think people get really excited about the new documents. But I don't get too excited about them because a lot of it is redacted, right? You can't, half of it you can't read. These, and when I say CIA, it's mostly CIA, where they're, you know, allowing us to view these documents after all these years. And they're not going to give us anything that blows the lid off of everything. And that's the thing. I don't trust that will ever happen, which is why we just have to do our research, open our minds, right? Think critically and attack this the way we should, because it matters. It still matters. It changed everything in this country.
It really did. So talk more about the cover-up, though. That's part of your book, because there's the actual assassination, and then there was this shoddy operation of the Warren Commission, which was, it's a joke. So walk us through that.
It is a joke. And that's why I say it insults your intelligence, right? It's like, come on. You know, so you have the act itself. No one really knows what happened. Well, certainly Americans don't, because immediately the perpetrators go into control mode. So people now also goes back to your other question. They know that there was an Operation Mockingbird, mm-hmm. which is the CIA infiltrating mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post. So they had to have that in place because they had to have them cooperate. And people say, oh, Walter Cronkite, he just went. Back then, you were a patriot or you weren't. So Walter Cronkite was a patriot. And I feel like he felt, I have to go along with this because if I don't, there could be World War III. They were probably telling him that, like, listen, Oswald did this alone. That's what we got to go with, because you don't want people thinking it was the Russians or the Cubans or certainly not the U.S. government, elements of the U.S. government. There'd be chaos. So they almost feel like they were just doing their patriotic duty.
Yeah, to you know, protect established order.
Correct. But the cover-up was so shoddy. It started with Oswald. I mean, really, Oswald, I mean, just, I can't get past it. I tell people, all you need to know that there was a problem here and that there was a conspiracy is that Jack Ruby walks into a police station. There's, I don't know, 50 police officers in there, special agents, goes right up to Oswald, shoots him, kills him.
In front of cameras.
Oswald never
too,
has,
if I'm not mistaken.
In front of cameras on live TV. I've talked to people who were watching TV at the time that happened. And they could not, it was shocking because of what just happened to Kennedy. And again, your critical thinking skills just come right to the forefront. Yep. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you know, yeah, something's wrong here.
Not to mention, I mean, if I'm not mistaken, they just, Kennedy's head just went missing. Like, just don't know what happened to it, right? One of 30 inexplicable things. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. 2022 is history. But have you thought about what you'll do in 2023, how you'll make it better than last year? That's why I have a challenge for you. Become better educated. Look, every new year has a new opportunity. So I have a great way for you to make the most of this one. Join me in helping take the online courses with Hillsdale College. Their amazing online courses are for free for all who wish to learn. They have significantly enriched my life. Look, take one of these fantastic courses, like the beauty of the Bible and the Genesis story. Study the writings of C.S. Lewis, or maybe even go into the meaning of America in Constitution 101. There are many courses to choose from. They're self-paced, they're free, they're fulfilling, they're deep, they're beautiful. Go to charlieforhillsdale.com and pick one of the more than 30 free Hillsdale online courses. I hope you'll accept my challenge. Pick whichever course you like. That is charlieforhillsdale.com. Resolve to go deeper and get more educated this year, charlieforhillsdale.com. So, Jack, let me ask you, excuse the kind of cruel pun, but gun to your head, what happened in Dallas, Texas?
I try to avoid the gun to my head. And in the book, I try because, I'm a journalist. I'm a documentarian. I'm like, oh, what do I say at the end of this? And I learned a lot. But what I tell people is when they ask me who killed Kennedy, the first thing I say is the Cold War and its cold warriors killed Kennedy. And what I mean by that is it was the times in which Kennedy governed that got him killed. That's my first answer. And my second answer, I know who didn't kill Kennedy. I feel very confident about who didn't kill Kennedy, and that's Lee Harvey Oswald.
So let me ask you, do you think Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Texas School Book Depository at the time, or do you think he was somewhere else?
I think he was there. He was told, that's where his job was, and he was doing certain things in his intelligence capacity. And he may or may not have been in front of the building. There's controversy about a photo there that shows what really looks like Oswald there. But again, not definitive, whatever. It is very interesting. But I think he was in there because that was part of the setup. And I also think that he went to the Texas theater because his CIA handler told him to meet him there. And that's why he goes there. And within minutes, there's, again, 100 Dallas police officers there arresting him. There's so much to that that just doesn't make any sense. And so, yeah, I think Oswald actually, I'll go ahead and say this. And if you read the book, you'll see why, because of what a lot of people say. He actually thought that he could prevent the assassination. And I think he was told by his handler and by, whoever his bosses were, that he was there to infiltrate Cuban exiles, the Cuban exile community, and get to know these people. I mean, he knew Jack Ruby. He knew Jack Ruby from New Orleans. And that's another story.
But Oliver Stone goes into great detail about that in the film.
Yeah, it's incredible what was going on in New Orleans in the summer of 63. I'll tell you that. But anyway, so Oswald was doing what he was told. And then he actually, there's evidence to suggest that he thwarted an assassination attempt in Chicago and that he had gotten in touch with an FBI agent up there and was like, and it was a guy, and the FBI just said an asset named Lee, called Lee, told us that there were Cuban exiles up there. There might have been an assassination attempt. And then we all know that he did bring a note to the FBI offices in Dallas and FBI agent Hostie. He brought him a note that said there's going to be an assassination attempt coming up during this motorcade.
When was that?
That was probably about a week or so before.
Okay.
So
do you believe that if it wasn't Oswald then from the window at the Texas School Book Depository, then you believe then there was probably munition fire from the grassy knoll?
Without question. And it's eyewitness accounts and eyewitness accounts of not only, you know, women and children, but men who were in the military.
No, dozens of people, right? Dozens, yes.
Dozens of people. And I feel like there were probably two or three teams in place. And I think that there was a team on the sixth floor because that's how they had to frame Oswald. So there was a team up there.
So
they left the gun and the bullets.
So therefore, if you believe, I'm trying to whittle this down as quickly as I can. Therefore, if you believe there was something in the grassy knoll, that was, we know, controlled by United States Secret Service. Therefore, do you believe the federal government was involved?
Elements of the federal government were involved.
Okay. And how does that apply to our lessons today?
We have to understand our history and we have to be critical thinkers and fight for our freedoms, because otherwise they'll be taken away. And I think that the Kennedy assassination, it's been a downward spiral ever since. And it's, we have to maintain our freedoms. And the only way we do that is by doing the work, right? Knowledge is power. We can't just not care anymore. And I think that's why I wrote the book, because I think a lot of people, if you interviewed them in the street, if they even knew who JFK was, they would say, it's 60 years ago. Who cares? Well, you should care because you're an American. And we're never going to quite be right again until the truth comes out about that.
Jack Roth, super interesting. I want to have you back on. There was about 30 questions I wanted to ask about, especially the declassification of documents. But that's a reason to have you back on, because we're out of time. Check out his book, Killing Kennedy. Make sure you get the Jack Roth version. Jack, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie.
Charlie Kirk here. Look, I've told you about producer Andrew and how Relief Factor has really improved his life and relieved the pain in his knees and back. Now, let me tell you about Yvonne in California. She says this, quote, "Both my husband and I are in our 70s and so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom from aches and pains like Relief Factor." I hear you, Yvonne. Relief Factor works for me too. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free solution developed by doctors based on scientific research to help your body attack the underlying inflammation causing you pain. 3 weeks from now, you could be doing the things you enjoy doing. Your first step to becoming pain-free could be just to order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. After trying Relief Factor, over 500,000 people have gone on to order more. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Live your best life and feel the difference with Relief Factor. All right, let's go through the list of all the things the left thinks is toxic. They think masculinity is toxic. They think marriage is toxic. They think Christianity is toxic. And now they have a new one. Oh, yeah, they think owning guns is toxic. Borders are toxic. They think children being children are toxic, but they got a new one. According to the freak Scott Wiener from California, who we have gone into great detail of who he is, he says conservatives are trying to make protecting gas stoves, which are toxic, a culture war issue. Now, look, I don't cook very much. Not one of my giftings is to cook. I'm actually awful at it. But I know from very limited experience that electric stoves versus a gas-powered stove, it's not even a question. And joining us now is Chef Andrew Gruhl, who is an anti-lockdown chef from California, somewhat of a legend. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, Andrew, you are a world-class chef, very well respected. I am a layman with these things. The extent of my cooking is something similar to a pyrotechnic experiment, and it doesn't always go well. What is the technical difference between a gas stove and electric stove? Let's just start there. Why should gas stoves be continued in the culinary tradition of the West?
At the very base of this, when I cook with electric, the likelihood I'm going to burn my food is probably 1,000% higher.
Wow.
Because it takes so long to get the pan up to temperature, but then it also takes so long to get it down that when I do get it up, it keeps getting hotter and hotter and hotter because you cannot manipulate heat. I can't just turn it on or off, right? I turn the gas off, it's off. Electric, it's this long, slow, gradual incline and decline. So you're going to burn your food, which actually burnt food, they say, has carcinogens in it, which could lead to cancer. So they're encouraging you to die.
Yeah, and so that just seems like such a simple answer. And I don't like burnt food. I mean, let's just be honest. If I'm using a gas-powered stove, there's a likelihood that if I'm in charge, everything's getting burnt. So if it's electric, the community is getting burned down. So but even for you as a world-class chef and as an expert, you say that if you are being forced, let's pretend in a let's just say a massive kitchen of which you operate some very big restaurants, you using an electric stove, I mean, it could actually be a business liability for you. Is that an exaggeration?
No. That's not an exaggeration at all. And that's why nobody uses electric. You know, there's opportunities to use electric. There's opportunities to use induction. But, you know, I think they want us to get down into the weeds. We're really hearing the granular about gas versus electric, which is a subjective conversation. And when you get into subjectivity, it can be very much about kind of, well, I think we should look at it this way or that way. Let's take a huge step back here and understand. By making the switch to electric, we are polluting the environment by their standards, by their math, by their calculus. We are polluting the environment more, right? Because right now, our electricity is coming from natural gas, coal, nuclear, and a very slim minority, renewables. I can get gas directly to my home. And what they're asking me to do instead is to go back to the electric grid, which is now inefficient because it's one large step away from my home, turn on the electricity, which requires the coal and the natural gas that they're trying to ban, to get the electric to my home. It's not just incredibly inefficient. It's going to double, if not triple, the emissions that they say pollute the environment. You see, this is not about the environment.
No.
By its very simple standards, this is worse for the environment.
Then what is it?
Consider me an environmentalist.
What is it about? I'm all for protecting the environment. I'm also for rationality and sanity. What is this about then?
Well, it's about control. And I know I sound crazy saying
that. No, you don't. Right? You actually sound very reasonable. But
well, let me back up. I know I sound crazy to some saying that. But really, you can't cut off somebody's natural gas. Somebody can get gas, they can get a generator. You can't just cut that off. You've got a kill switch when it all comes down to the grid. And for some reason, the left has attached themselves to this idea that we need to move everything into electric. The grid, all of that needs to be electric. Well, we haven't gotten there with renewables. Let's play a level game right now where we are not trying to battle and there's no craziness out there. And we're all just sitting down with open minds trying to understand how we can be better for the environment. Well, number one, we need renewables to be a lot more efficient, a lot more economical, right? Until we get that done, none of this stuff matters because it's all being driven by the items that they claim kill the environment, coal, and now they're saying natural gas. And to that, in over the past decade, we've decreased our fossil fuel emissions by 25%. And guess how we did that? Natural gas.
Yes. And natural gas is abundant. It's cheap. It's affordable. Yep. I believe that if you were to list the hardest businesses to run, in the top 1% of all the hardest businesses, the elite restaurant business is one of the hardest businesses to run. I have so much respect for people that are able to run restaurants, run them well, because you think about it, I'm sure all of you could remember a bad meal that you had. And it's actually probably unfair because that's just probably one out of 300 people that they're serving that hour, but that one could impact the rest of your likelihood of going to that restaurant. So you have to be on with every customer, every dish. I was marveling at how many restaurants you have. This kind of gives you a lot of credibility here. How many restaurants do you have and how many people do you have on staff currently?
So I actually just sold my largest restaurant group where we had over 500 employees. Right now, wow. I've got eight different concepts, and we've got probably over 50 employees. So yes, we have multiple concepts and this affects us financially, like on a level I can't even attempt to explain.
And so are all your restaurants in California right now? Is that right?
Right now they are. Yeah.
And so kind of, there's another, we can keep talking about the stove thing, but can you just elaborate a little bit more? You're a business owner, you know, you're in a business where it looks as if you are using organic ingredients and locally sourced product, and you are creating experiences for people that is very high quality and high impact. And the kind of push here for power and for control, are other people in your industry equally as worried about this kind of electric stove push or kind of the insertion of government into the food or restaurant business, or are you kind of a minority in the restaurant chef industry?
Yeah, sadly, I'm a minority. And like, for example, I just did this spoof where I taped myself to the stove and I said, I'm protesting, this is absurd. And I get hundreds of messages from well-known chefs, people that I know in the industry, Food Network personalities, people who are like, you're killing it, man. This is awesome. I mean, this is just so absurd. Well, why am I the only one speaking up? Well, because nobody wants to get canceled. The power right now, especially in these industries by the media and everybody's, you know, fear of getting canceled. Nobody wants to speak out against the system, no matter how crazy it is.
That is sad but true. So you sent out a tweet here that I totally agree, and we haven't actually had a chance to talk about this topic yet. CBS News says children struggling with obesity should be evaluated and treated early and aggressively, including with medications for kids as young as 12 and surgery for those as young as 13. My goodness. According to new guidelines released Monday, you say 100% nope, kids should not be on medicine at this age. This will lead to a lifetime of meds, side effects, and dependency on legal drugs. Get outside, move, cook at home, eat well, turn off the TV, iPad, solved. 14 million kids are obese. 14 million kids are obese. You are in the business of delivering high-quality food to people. How do we solve the childhood obesity issue?
It really is simple. That's the thing. And you got to also understand what's in our food. So all of our food systems have been consolidated the same way the government is trying to consolidate absolutely everything. And the reason that they consolidate food is because food is control. And ultimately, they can control everybody if it's just one, two, or three major massive corporations. Well, the way in which these corporations can continue to deliver to their shareholders and continue to deliver to the government, because they've effectively merged, is by decreasing the quality of their products. And the way in which they can create more, right, larger output, is by introducing chemicals to and preservatives, but now they're you know, highly toxic chemicals, in my opinion, which changes the ways that our bodies process a lot of these foods. And all of this processed food is high in things like high fructose corn syrup, omega-6 fatty acids by way of seed oils. And those things lead to imbalances in our natural kind of our natural human calculus, right? So if I've got way too many omega-6 fatty acids in my diet, then I'm going to be subject to obesity, diabetes, hypertension. 6 of the 8 leading causes of death in the United States can be alleviated by the regular consumption of healthy omega-3 fatty acids. Well, guess where those also come from? Grass-fed beef. Well, we have corn subsidies. We have sugar subsidies. We have these subsidies that have been created in order to perpetuate a system where it's just more, but it's not quality, right? So we're eating nutrient-free food. We used to have 400 varieties of apples in the United States. Now we have 3 major varieties. Well, what happens if one of those varieties goes out? We just lost 33% of the entire apple output in the United States. And I use that as one example, but that's kind of underscores, I think, the problem that we see across the entire food system. And I said this when we were getting caught up with this whole Ukraine crisis, because everyone said, we're going to have food shortages because all of our wheat comes from Eastern Europe. And I said, why is our wheat coming from Eastern Europe? Why is all of our food coming from Eastern Europe? We need to be buying our food locally, yes, putting it back into our communities. And I got completely crushed by everybody on the left. And I'm thinking to myself, 10 years ago, this was your platform. Your platform was anti-big pharma,
local food. This used to be a huge issue on the left. And I don't know where I don't want to politicize it, then put you, yeah, you know, but it's a matter of freedom and also individual sovereignty. Whatever happened to the locavorian movement? I grew up in a time where I was screamed at by the vegan people that we need to have your peppers and your apples and your bananas sourced within a 90-mile range. Now everyone's cool getting this GMO-filled garbage from Monsanto.
And you know where it came from? Propaganda and everybody's inability to think critically. Headlines are like drugs right now, and news media outlets and politicians are basically the new sports stars. When they shut down sports through COVID, everybody who was a sports fanatic suddenly became they were into politics. They wanted Pelosi's name on the back of their jersey. They've lost the ability to think critically, and now that is translated into our food. We're only going to get fatter and dumber.
So, Andrew, just this is such an important thing. The food that we are eating is not the food of a couple generations before. What do you personally do, and what's the advice you personally give people to be able to eat nutrient-dense, non-GMO, hopefully food that is, I'm struggling to find the right word, but food that is more similar to that of a couple decades ago? Your thoughts, how can people actually achieve that?
First and foremost, just cooking a little bit more at home, because when you cook at home, you know what's going into your food. So you might eat something that's got a ton of nutrients in it, but then you cancel a lot of those out with the junk that's in the food. And it's really not that difficult to cook when you learn a couple skills. So if anybody does want to learn how to cook, all they got to do is follow me on YouTube or go to my website. But also, really, it's simple, right? Oils, that's a huge one. Cooking with butter is good. All of these things that they tried to create it to kind of hack our nutrient system, right? Margarine, hydrogenated oils have all turned out to, of course, be cancerous and horrible for us. And they continue with the lie. The food pyramid is the prime example.
Yep.
So cooking with whole foods, cooking with fats, eating just anything whole. Like meat is not bad.
Meat's great for you, good thing. Actually.
Meat is great for you. Chicken, protein, high protein, utilize the fats. Seafood is massive. If you don't like seafood, you know, at least just go for the oils or try and find some sort of a seafood source that you like, because typically they're lean proteins, even if you move into crustaceans. And nowadays, because of the freezing technology, people think frozen food is bad. Freezing food is actually great. Let's take advantage of technology and frozen fish, frozen fruits, frozen vegetables, all very good for you. So if you take a little bit of time, I hate to use the word meal prep because I think it's kind of, you know, cliched, but even if you just got some food in your fridge, even that one meal a week is enough right there. And when you do go out to eat, just ask questions. Try and avoid a lot of the kind of, you know, massive chains, because all they're doing is just serving up shareholder profits at the expense of your health.
What oils do you use? Do you use coconut oil? And you definitely stay away from seeds, right? But mostly butter,
so
is what you're saying?
Avocado oil is a great one.
Good.
Ghee is really good one. Clarified butter. Ghee and clarified butter are effectively in the same family. Whole butter. Let's see. I use a lot of, I do use coconut oils, but the avocado oil, the coconut oil, and then pure olive oil, right? So you have extra virgin olive oil, which is really great to eat raw and to eat just dipping bread in. And then you've got pure olive oil, which has been processed olive oil. That is a higher smoke point. So you can cook with the pure olive oil. Don't spend all the money that you would for an extra virgin, because you're going to cook off all that flavor. So I have two types of olive oil, extra virgin to just eat. And once again, like, you don't even need to cook. I'll just buy a loaf of bread, good bread or vegetables, and I'll just dip it in the olive oil, hit it with a real high quality vinegar. And that's enough right there. You know, mustards, make your own mayonnaise at home. That's a simple one. Dip the world in mayonnaise and you're good to go.
And as you notice here, he's promoting that you eat fats. Yes, fats are actually very important to a diet. This is why the food pyramid is a lie. And carbohydrates are vastly overrated, especially grain-based carbohydrates. Andrew, I hope to meet you sometime. Congratulations on your success.
Likewise.
I have a great amount of respect for chefs and restaurateurs. It's very difficult, especially during COVID and all this nonsense. God bless. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email me your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.